This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, the NFL trade deadline has come and gone. We'll still wait to see if we've got any news that's trickling out. You know, deals getting done right at the deadline happen to be reported minutes or even an hour later. But so far, what we have is a lot of activity from a team that we saw playing on Monday Night Football, the Kansas City Chiefs, yesterday making the move to trade a 6-round pick to the Pittsburgh Steelers for outside linebacker Melvin Ingram. And you got to love the soundbite from Mike Tomlin with that one, saying that they want volunteers and not hostages when it comes to playing for the Steelers. But then also today, the Kansas City Chiefs trading backup offensive lineman Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the doctor, to the New York Jets for tight end special teamer Daniel Brown. So we'll keep an eye on that. But also some sneaky news out of the Green Bay Packers. They're releasing Jalen Smith. We know they picked him up after the Dallas Cowboys cut ties with him a few weeks ago. But the big piece of news is Deshaun Watson, Houston Texans, Miami Dolphins not being able to make a deal happen at the trade deadline. I know that you expected this. I got to say, Mike, I'm a little bit surprised, because now it feels like this is going to be an offseason thing and that there are going to be more teams involved. And so be interesting to see whether or not the Dolphins are going to be able to land that plane when it comes to getting Deshaun Watson in the 2022 league year.
Yeah, so much of this seemed contingent on what we were hearing and what we thought might have been the case with the resolution of Deshaun Watson's 22 pending civil allegations of sexual assault and impropriety. And what we heard from Adam Schefter, I think, kind of reminds us the timeline for that is still going to be much longer than people tried to give us credit for. Adam Schefter tweeted out, "Although the Dolphins did due diligence on Deshaun Watson and had conversations with Houston, Miami will not trade for the quarterback. Owner Stephen Ross, who had contingencies that needed to be met for any deal, made the final decision to not move forward. While Miami considered bringing him in, no deal was ever in place, and the Dolphins stick with Tua." To me, Chris, that reminder of, hey, there are contingencies that need to be in there, protections, say that there was nothing that seemed to be getting closer to being resolved for Deshaun Watson off the field. And so on the field, people remain, I think, rightly skeptical of what you would actually be able to get bringing him to your football team.
Yeah, and I thought that one of the reports that got out there this weekend about how the Dolphins were pushing Deshaun Watson's camp to settle the suits, and then the Texans subsequently getting wind of that and trying to jack up the trade compensation, I think that complicated any potential deal that could have been consummated today at the deadline. But yeah, as far as the Miami Dolphins are concerned, it would be a risk if you took on Deshaun without him settling the legal situations, both the criminal part and the civil complaints. But I think it's also a risk for the Miami Dolphins, knowing that once that stuff does get settled, you're anticipating in the spring some of that stuff kind of getting cleared up, at least having a clearer picture of the timeline when Watson would be available and get past these issues. There are going to be other teams that get involved with this. There are going to be other teams that want Deshaun Watson. And I get it, you know, in today's age, it's one of those situations that, you know, when you're facing these types of allegations, you can kind of become radioactive. But Deshaun Watson, when he's healthy and available, is a top five quarterback in this league. There are going to be plenty of teams that are in the quarterback market next year. And let's be honest, next year's draft class, when it comes to the quarterback position, it ain't what we saw this year. So I just know that there's going to be more competition when it comes to trying to get Deshaun Watson services. And I'm thinking maybe the Miami Dolphins might have missed an opportunity to add their franchise quarterback for the next 10 to 12 years.
Yeah, it was a lot to try and juggle if you were owner Stephen Ross there, because we know, while it's not going to be the first thing considered, there's a lot of blowback that would be coming because of what you mentioned about Deshaun Watson feeling radioactive at this point based on the allegations that have been presented to us. So all of that going to wait for another day again. The trade deadline comes and goes, and Deshaun Watson remains with the Houston Texans for the remainder of the season. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program, now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles and helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, the other name that we were all keeping an eye on around the trade deadline was Odell Beckham Jr. We saw last night his father, Odell Beckham Sr., made waves by putting out an 11-minute video highlighting all the spots where Odell was open and Baker Mayfield wasn't getting him the football. We have seen now the trade deadline has come and gone for him. And Kimberly Martin, our ESPN NFL insider, tweeted reporting, for now, OBJ remains in Cleveland, despite him not wanting to be there. I'm told there were discussions regarding Odell going to the Saints, but both sides couldn't agree on a workable deal given how much OBJ is owed for the rest of the year. Plus, there is still optimism in the Brown building that OBJ can be a big part of their second half playoff push. And Chris, that's probably a good reminder. Odell Beckham Jr. is okay. That playoff push sounds funny, huh?
Yeah. Come on, bro. Stop it. If you know that he doesn't want to be there, how is he going to be a big part of whatever playoff push that you guys are going to make? Like, ultimately for Odell, is it in his best interest to ball so he can get out of Cleveland? Yes, you want to try to build the market as much as you can so this offseason the Cleveland Browns can flip you for an asset that they can then use to add on to a team that they feel like they can contend with. But, I mean, that's not going to happen when your father is openly throwing your quarterback under the bus. If your dad is throwing the quarterback under the bus, do you think your quarterback is going to throw you the ball? Come on, man. A part of this is just common sense. And there is a lot, there's a human element when it comes to locker room dynamics. So Odell Beckham Jr. and Odell Beckham Sr. are kind of missing out in terms of being able to accomplish their ultimate objective, which is get Odell to a place with a team that can contend and a team that's going to include him more in the offense.
I'm not going to lie, Chris, from like a 30,000-foot view here, if you squint your eyes real hard, this is starting to feel very Ben Simmons and Philadelphia 76ers-ish, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
I just you have a disgruntled star player, disagreement from both sides about how much that player is at fault for the things going on within the body of the organization. Like, again, that's the part I keep going back to, Chris, is I feel like everyone on the outside's been pretty aware and pretty patient. Outside of that weird stretch last year where people wanted to have that conversation of, you know, is the offense better without Odell? Like, I don't think anyone believes that's the case when Odell is operating the way he always has. But between injury, between being in a system that doesn't necessarily funnel the ball to one player under Kevin Stefanski, you got to start to wonder if, you know, again, both sides being able to admit, hey, Baker's not always been on top of his game and now he's hurt. And Odell Beckham Jr. hasn't always been there and is now also been dealing with injuries as we've gone along here. But instead, it seems like the Beckham Jr. camp, at least on his dad's side, wanted to push all the chips into the table and say, nah, this ain't on us.
Yeah, that sounds good. But now Odell Beckham is becoming mercurial. And that makes it a little bit tough for teams to digest, especially when you consider the price tag and whatever assets that they would then have to ship to the Cleveland Browns in order to acquire him. Like, when you start looking at the salary for Beckham after this year, I mean, you're talking about 2 years left with $30 million on that contract. That's not a small number. And then you also have to consider the compensation and draft picks going back to Cleveland. So the last thing you want to do is make up a whole bunch of noise around you, because all of a sudden teams then ask themselves, do we want to get involved with the player that we know can create a toxic environment if things don't go his way? Like, this is classic diva wide receiver behavior. And for a player that hasn't had the production in the last couple of years, teams are going to wonder whether or not that's worth it. So, again, what Odell Beckham is doing, both senior and junior, is counterproductive to what they want to actually happen, which is for Odell to be in a place where he can be productive and to be with the team that can actually contend.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, remember, that goes back to his time in the Giants, right? Like, a lot of that was tied to instances on the field, all the stuff with the net. Like, most of that felt harmless, but now as you
when he was a 1,000-yard receiver and he had double-digit touchdowns, Mike, you could stomach some of that stuff. That's not the case now. I mean, I just gave you the numbers. The last 2 years, Beckham has had 40 catches, 550 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And that's over the course of 13 games. So, I mean, is the juice worth the squeeze when it comes to putting up with the headache that Odell is now starting to create for the Cleveland Browns?
Oh, no, absolutely not. And again, all those things that maybe look a little more innocent at the time or look like stuff that you can just excuse away as passion on the field, when you start to couple it with this in a second spot and the production starts to drop the way it has and the way you just described, all that adds up to what you just mentioned, a label that starts to look like something we don't necessarily want to deal with right now, especially not the price that Odell Beckham Jr., I'm sure, wants to continue to be paid in the NFL. So we've got all of that going on as the trade deadline has come and gone in the NFL, with relatively little outside of the Von Miller trade that we saw yesterday from the Broncos to the Rams. Coming up next, though, Does that move qualify for the top five things we saw in the NFL weekend that was here? We will find out as Chris Canty takes you to the penthouse next here on ESPN Radio.
The NFL trade deadline is today at 4 Eastern. Follow the very latest moves. Get complete reaction and analysis. Plus, what's next? From Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max starting at 6 Eastern and continuing all day. The NFL is on ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. We got Dan Orlovsky coming up in a little bit. But right now, we got to get to week 8 of the top 5 things that we saw around the National Football League. So I'm going to kick it over to Devin, my dude. Can we get the music started, please?
Which teams were great?
Breaks a tackle at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
What player was not?
Does he hang on? Intercepted! He couldn't hang on!
This is the NFL Top 5, Bottom 5.
All right, got to kick this thing off with number 5.
Number 5.
Mike, I had to start with the Lane Johnson interview that he did with Jay Glazer over the weekend addressing his mental health and talking about the stigma that's associated with it in professional football. This on the same weekend where we saw wide receiver Calvin Ridley making a decision to step away from football to focus on his mental well-being. We touched on it a little bit yesterday, but I think it bears repeating. Athletes being able to take it upon themselves to address their mental health in a serious way, I think normalizing that within the culture of professional sports is something that's well needed, and it's about time we've gotten to that point.
Yeah, normalizing it for everyone. I mean, hell, it should be just as part of routine maintenance as anything we do physically, but especially in this sport, Chris, like we heard Lane and Jay talk about, it's been a place where it's been hard to say this out loud because people think if I show anything that used to be perceived as weakness, which we know this isn't, it would be exploited. It would be something thrown in your face. And what's been nice to see is the way the whole NFL community and that brotherhood that you were a part of, Chris, has rallied around Lane and others who have been dealing with this.
Absolutely, and I think it just makes for a better player, a better person moving forward. And I'm thankful that teams are giving guys the space and the latitude to be able to address these issues in the way that they see fit, and the organization not trying to micromanage that. I think that's something important to highlight within this as well. Okay, let's get to number 4.
Number 4.
You want some Adebo, old man? No. That's exactly what the Chicago Bears defense said this weekend. Deebo Samuel's going off, 6 catches for 171 yards, including an 84-yard catch and run on a screen on 3rd and 20 that led to a Jimmy Garoppolo touchdown run. Now, if you're asking me, Jimmy Garoppolo was being a little bit selfish and not handing that ball to Deebo because it looked like it was a shovel pass situation, but I digress. He helped San Francisco snap a 4-game losing streak, and in the process, surpasses Jerry Rice for the best 7-game start to a season for a 49ers wide receiver in team history. 819 yards through the first 7 games for Deebo. He beat the old mark of 781. Are you impressed, Gojo, with what Deebo Samuels did on Sunday and what he's done this season?
Not only am I impressed, I'm overjoyed, Chris. Like, I had a chance to cover Deebo when he was at South Carolina, and one of the things that was always awful about his college career was how often injury crept in and thwarted what could have been a guy I thought was a bona fide Heisman Trophy candidate. So to see him now get to be healthy for a long stretch and get to accomplish at this level, this is what was always there with his ability. Very cool to see it actually happen.
All right, let's get to number 3.
Number 3.
So today, the trade deadline came and went. It felt like a little bit of a dud, but yesterday we had fireworks in the way of the LA Rams trading for pass rusher outside linebacker Von Miller. The Rams send back a 2022 second and third round pick to the Denver Broncos. This adds another pass rusher to a D-line that features Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd. We should create more one-on-one rush opportunities for all of them, which is a scary proposition for a team that already leads the league in sacks at 25. I love this move. We talked to Lindsay Theory yesterday. She covers the team for ESPN, and she let it be known that the team wanted to make a move in order to free up Aaron Donald, get some of those double teams off of him. Adding Von Miller to a defensive front with Leonard Floyd on it as well should shake Aaron Donald free and give him some more one-on-one opportunities, and that's got to be scary for all offensive linemen, especially those interior guys, Mike.
Yeah, that's the last thing we need to do is give more advantages to the D-tackle with a six-pack. Ridiculous. I'm sick of it. Good for them.
All right, let's go to number two.
Number two.
Oh, man, it's nothing like a homecoming game, especially when you're the DBs Darius Slay and Adrian Phillips. Slay, after spending seven seasons in the Motor City, having a chance to be a part of a defense that held his former Detroit Lions to 228 yards of total offense and 6 points in garbage time. And, of course, he had to scoop and score off the DeAndre Swift fumble. And then Adrian Phillips, after spending six seasons with the L.A. Chargers, gets his revenge with two interceptions in the game, including one house call for the go-ahead score in the fourth quarter. Gojo, are you impressed with those two guys going back home and getting some get back from their former teams?
Oh, my God. A good old-fashioned revenge game? Are you kidding me? It's my favorite phenomenon in sports, Chris. And for these guys to be able to do it, certainly the icing on the cake of a season here that's going to need a little bit of help and feeling good across the board. But who doesn't love revenge, man?
Absolutely, especially when you score touchdowns as a defensive player. Like, I feel like that's a big thing. So I'm just saying. Number one.
Let's get to number one.
And, Mike, I'm glad we saved some time to get to number one because we got quite a few players that we got to mention in number one. Week eight was the week of the backup in the NFL season. You had backup QBs balling all over the place. Geno Smith getting the first win for the Seahawks after the Russell Wilson injury. They demolished the Jacksonville Jaguars. Came close to pitching a shutout, too, by the way, in that game. Trevor Siemian down in Caesars Sports Superdome, being able to step in for Jameis Winston and not fumbling the bag for the Saints defense, which is really the part of that team that won the game. Cooper Rush throwing the game-winning touchdown to Amari Cooper to beat the Vikes on the road with his parents in the stands, being able to cheer him on, happy that his folks actually got a chance to see him play after they follow him around at all his games and not really seeing their son on the field. But the one that we got to focus on, Mike, is another Mike. And according to Ty Johnson, we got to call this guy this. Mike effing White, the legend is born. The Jets QB pulling off the upset against the Cincinnati Bengals, throwing for 400 yards and three touchdowns. It's the second most yards in his first NFL start since Cam Newton. I think it's the most yards since Cam Newton. But, yeah, those are the two guys that have had the most since 1950, being able to throw for over 400 yards in their debut. So Mike effing White being able to get the job done. Who cares if he was checking the ball down to running backs most of the time? Doesn't matter. He was able to beat a really good Cincinnati Bengals defense at home in a game where everybody had relatively low expectations for him. And, Mike, just to put the icing on the cake for Mike White, he was able to catch the Philly special, the two-point conversion, to make it a three-point game rather than a one-point game. Credit to Mike White for having the poise to hang in there. Had some adversity early, but got the job done.
I don't know who the original Charlie was that checked it down so much that it got to be Check Down Charlie. I understand there's some alliteration there, but I'm going to vote that we move it to Check Down White effing Mike. I think we're going to go that way, too. That's the only switch I'd make up to their request for his name going forward here. But Check Down White Mike sounds good on my end here. So that is the top five, appropriately ending with the backups balling from this weekend here. We'll go swimming around in the swamp later on as I give you the bottom five from the NFL Week 8 that was. But coming up next, we're going back to college. The first round of the CFP rankings come out tonight. Let's find out who we are going to be mad online about before it's all said and done. We'll get to that after this word from Wendy's. Because right now, at Wendy's, see what all the hype's about with our new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real natural cut potatoes, spuds, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the very last fry, or we'll replace them. These aren't the typical fries you just add to a meal. They're the fries worth adding a meal to. Abandon the old, cold, and soggy, and head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's, back with the first round of rankings next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear hotlines. And Mike, tonight we got the initial rankings for the college football playoffs. They're going to be announced, and who's going to be ranked 5 through 7. Everybody wants to know where Cincinnati is going to be ranked. And I feel like we're in this posture where we're bracing ourselves for the fake outrage that is for the Cincinnati Bearcats being able to make sure that an undefeated team, even though they're not a Power 5 team, has an opportunity to be in the college football playoff.
Yeah, that is the center of the college football universe, or so it feels like right now, Chris. And you're right, it's interesting. I think there are a lot of people that genuinely like this Cincinnati team, right? Like Luke Fickle, their head coach, has been one of the best we've seen in all of college football as of late. They've kind of taken that mantle from what we saw for years from Boise State, from UCF, in the Group of Five as the premier team for that conference. But as we get to this point now, I feel like for most people, what Cincinnati represents is that kind of anti-establishment feel, right? Because most people look at the college football playoff, Chris, and I think are having that emotional response of being sick of what they perceive as the same handful of teams dominating the sport.
Well, yeah, and I think that outrage shouldn't necessarily be for the Cincinnati Bearcats, because when you look at their strength of schedule, having only beaten one AP top 25 team, and that would be your Fighting Irish, I mean, in terms of the resume that they're going to have at the end of the season in comparison to some of the other teams that are going to be considered, like, you have a hard time making a case that Cincinnati would belong in that top four. So I think the people that are frustrated about Cincinnati and the prospects that they could be on the outs, even as an undefeated team, should be more frustrated as the system as a whole, and recognizing that you probably need to have an expansion of the college football playoff so you can include more Group of Five teams, or at least have Group of Five teams have a pathway to actually getting into the playoffs and mixing it up with some of these big boys from the Power Five conferences.
Chris, I completely agree. The argument Cincinnati brings to the college football playoff this year is one that expansion is vital. It is absolutely vital here, because I get what everyone's saying here. Paul Feinbaum, our SEC Network analyst, host of the Paul Feinbaum Show, was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning and said what he believes should sound the siren for worry as we head into the rankings tonight for the CFP committee as it pertains to Cincinnati.
If they are at the number four position, I would be very concerned, because I think they're going to move down. If they're number two or three, then they can breathe a little bit easier. Their problem is the schedule. They have SMU in 3 weeks. That is a good game if you're a football junkie, but if you're sitting there watching at a bar in Manhattan, you're going like, what kind of garbage is that? I'm not gonna get that off my TV. And seriously, SMU lost over the weekend, which, you know, again, the same guy in the bar didn't see, because they were playing Houston. But the committee pays attention to all this wonkiness. So I think if they're below three, they're in trouble.
Cannon Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. G5 shots aside there, Chris, because these are good football teams. Like, I want to say that, man. Like, none of this is about not valuing the G5. I got to call so many games in that area of football last year with teams from the MAC, with the Sun Belt, all the above. There's great football there. But you mentioned it. This is about finding the four best teams here. And I understand people are ticked off that they feel like there's not a viable path, that if you win all your games there, you should be rewarded. That Cincinnati, who went out and scheduled a road game at IU, who we didn't know they were going to bottom out like this, especially after last year, who went on the road in South Bend and got a top 10 road win, one that's going to hold up as Notre Dame continues to win, will likely be in the top 10 tonight. There are still other teams involved in all this, too. Like, I understand people are sick of feeling like we're feeding the same few handful of teams to the Georgias and Alabamas of the world at the top of this. The Clemsons traditionally in the college football playoff. But, like, we still have to do the job, and part of this feels like an emotional response, because I think Cincinnati should be ranked at least third in this college football playoff poll to start things off. Their remaining strength of schedule that you brought up is 82nd, and I know the big wins matter. But at some point, everyone wants to talk about all the games mattering here, too, what people are going to play. And when we look at what Michigan State's got left with the Big Ten East, Ohio State is well in all of that, like, you're going to have plenty of opportunities for these teams to garner marquee wins that aren't there for Cincinnati right now. And I know people are seeing that as penalizing Cincinnati, but I want to look at it as rewarding other teams out there that are also going to continue to play a tougher schedule week in and week out.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're upset that Cincinnati's strength of schedule isn't what some of the other teams are, then you got to look at their athletic director and talk about what they're doing non-conference and trying to create a a more non-conference heavy schedule in order to provide a pathway to the college football playoff, because as constituted, that's the only way that they're going to get in the CFP. So it's just one of those situations, unless you're a part of a group of five, I mean, a Power Five conference that has a conference championship game that you can obviously take part in, like, it's going to be tough to springboard and to stay in the top four teams when the rankings come out. That's just what it is. So I think people that are trying to cape for Cincinnati, their best argument is that the college football playoff needs to be expanded, because I don't know that you can make an argument to say that they are one of the four best teams in college football when you got the likes of Georgia, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Ohio State that are looming out there, not to mention Michigan State and Oregon. So I don't know, man. I want Cincinnati to have an opportunity. I root for the underdog in these circumstances. But my football eyes tell me that Cincinnati is not one of the top four teams in the country right now, just based on a talent standpoint.
And we see all across the board. We have these recruiting rankings. We look at the resources available to all these schools. We see why a team like Cincinnati is making the move to the Big 12. And I would say, for anyone that wants to act like the Power 5 slate and the Group of 5 slate that a team plays on their schedule are the same because teams have comparable records, like, all of the rest of that information we have says otherwise here. Like you said, this is a good Cincinnati team that might just be betrayed by the system that they're in right now. Canty and Gola Jr. is brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, the ESPN Power Rankings went for the NFL and took a look at the top five teams in the league. We'll tell you what a lot of those have in common next after we tell you about this opportunity for you. Because we're looking to hook up one lucky listener with $6,000 during tonight's baseball championship game. To enter to win, here's what you need to do. Listen to tonight's game on ESPN Radio. In the seventh inning, Dan, Eduardo, and Jessica are going to announce the winning word. You text that word to 777-000 to enter for a chance to win $6,000. And keep listening to all our ESPN Radio broadcast of the baseball championship, because the prizes just get bigger. In fact, the prize grows by $1,000 for every game. So do some math. If this goes all the way to seven games, final prize is $7,000. Bingo, bango. There's no purchase necessary. I don't know why I said that, by the way. I don't say that. That's not. Maybe I meant to say bing bong, but that doesn't apply here either because it's baseball season. I digress. Let me one more time for you. No purchase necessary. You can go to ESPNradio.com for complete sweepstakes rules. One more time. Listen to Game 6 tonight. Hear the winning word. Text the winning word to 777-000 for a chance to win $6,000. Messages and data rates may apply. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, ESPN just came out with their NFL power rankings, and I got to ask you this question, because as I'm looking at the list, there isn't an AFC team to be found in the top five, so do you have a problem with the NFL and ESPN saying that there is no AFC team in the top five of their power rankings?
Nah, this checks out, right? Like, we talked about this the other day. We were looking around wondering who the hell was actually good in the AFC, and considering the last taste in our mouth was the Buffalo Bills, who were supposed to be the champion of that group, getting bulldozed on primetime by the Tennessee Titans, I can understand saying that a lot of these teams have a suspect loss here or there, but I just look at what we've seen from the NFC. Chris is way more consistent up top. We got bona fide firepower, especially on offense on those teams, and we just haven't seen a slip-up like that from them. So I got to reward what we've seen from the NFC. I think they're absolutely right there, although I am curious about the Green Bay Packers as their choice for the number one seed.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man, especially after the move that the Rams just made. I think you got to vault them to the number one team in the NFL. And the Dallas Cowboys, I think, have a case to be made as well. Like, if I were making this list, I would probably give the Cowboys the edge, and then I will put the Los Angeles Rams right there at number two, the Green Bay Packers at number three, the Arizona Cardinals at number four because of what happened this past Thursday night in Week 8, and then I would round it out with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as the fifth best team. But, yeah, and looking at this list, I think they got it right with the NFC teams being, you know, the top five teams in the power rankings. I just don't necessarily agree with the order of it.
Yeah, I just keep going back to, and I understand, I don't know what went into this power rankings, if necessarily health was considered for Dak Prescott, who we don't know. Maybe the Cowboys will choose to continue to rest him as they have arrived at a soft spot in their schedule. But when that team is on the field, when that starting unit is on the field, and that's going to include Tyron Smith, who was dealing with an ankle in their last game in that win over Minnesota, that's the most complete offense in football. I don't think that's a stretch to say by any stretch of the imagination. And on defense, we know. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this show. So I got the most trust in that team by far in this, Chris. And I think the Los Angeles Rams are probably the one with the most upside from here on out because that defense has added so much to a group that's already first in sacks and tied for first in interceptions.
Yeah, and I think what's helping them out as well is the division isn't as strong as we thought it is, right? It feels like it's a two-horse race when it comes to the NFC West, whereas coming into the season, we felt like Seattle and San Francisco would both be right there in contention, and that doesn't feel like that's going to happen. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think the LA Rams do have the most upside of any of these teams that's included, but I'm not going to discount the potential for the Dallas Cowboys because we are talking about year one of Dan Quinn's defense, and that group is already markedly better than where they were last year, and they've shown the ability to consistently disrupt the opposing quarterbacks and the passing game, not to mention the ability to take the football away. And I keep saying this, but that group is going to continue to get better. The more experience that they get, we're talking about a lot of first and second year players being key contributors on that unit. And then we already know what they are on the offensive end. Like, the only thing that can slow down that Dallas Cowboys offense is that Dallas Cowboys offense and the health concerns. It's Dak Prescott's calf slash ankle, and it's Tyron Smith's neck slash back. Other than that, this Dallas Cowboys offense is a well-oiled machine. They are a buzzsaw that can cut through any NFL defense. So I feel like when we start talking about the teams and the aspects of it, the strengths and how styles make fights, the identity of the Dallas Cowboys in the elite offense that they have is something that can carry them throughout the season. But now they have the complementary piece in that defense, which is why I would vault them to number one in the NFL.
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. As we project this forward, Chris, because I was kicking this around with Dan Orlovsky, with Mina Kimes, who you guys can check out on NFL Live earlier. And the one thing I look at when I see a lot of the common threads amongst the elite in the NFC is defense that's predicated on getting to the quarterback, turning the ball over, doing all these things that we know in modern football are the onus. For you, as someone who's won a Super Bowl, who's played football in January and into February here, how concerned are you about a lot of those groups where the run defense is probably the only suspect part that we see for some of these top-end teams outside of Tampa Bay?
Well, I think it's a concern because you have to earn the right to rush the passer, and if you never talk teams out of it, if you can't create long downs and distances, then it's going to be hard for those pass rushers to pin their ears back, man. I mean, we used to talk about it all the time when I played for the New York Giants and when I played for the Baltimore Ravens. Like, those are two defensive fronts that prided themselves at getting at the opposing quarterback. We would say, hey, listen, we've got to be disruptive on first and second downs when these teams want to try to run the football, when they want to try to be balanced. You got to earn the right to rush the passer. You got to put them in, you know, second and long, third and long. And if you don't do that, then it's going to be hard to get after the quarterback when you're talking about third and three or less. So I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to playoff football and trying to make sure that your pass rushers can impact the game, put their imprint on the game. It's that you've got to make sure that you try your best to make teams one-dimensional and talk them out of the run game. That's the one thing that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did really, really well, especially under Todd Bowles, but particularly after their bye week last year. They made teams one-dimensional on the offensive side of the ball, and then you saw JPP, Shaq Barrett, and others being able to get after the quarterback. So I think that's the key when we start talking about pass rush, especially when it gets to December football on into the playoffs. Defenses have to be able to stop the run and make teams one-dimensional in order to rush the passer.
It's such an interesting styles make fight thing because we also know Tampa's not been a dominant rushing team through this season. It's been a team that wants to go bombs away on you. So would they even be in a position to challenge a lot of those groups that we've talked about atop of this conference? So that's the power rankings in the NFL. Coming up next, though, one name conspicuously absent from all of that. We got to ask the question, what the hell's wrong with the Kansas City Chiefs, and can it get fixed before it's too late?